Good evening. You're listening to KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio out of Round Mountain and Bella Vista. And this is Jim Dowling, host of Right Stuff. If you're new to Right Stuff, this is a show where I bring in local writing talent and they share their work with us. We get to know a writer. I have a very special guest. I know I always say that, but I do have a very special guest, Mark Oliver, in the studio with us. Mark has a book out called Voices of the Golden Ghosts, African Americans in the California Gold Rush. Thanks for coming in, Mark.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, and this has been a big project. It means a lot to a lot of people here locally. You've told a story that not many people know about. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the book and how the idea for it came about?
Well, we were doing The Voices of the Golden Ghosts, which is a series of kind of historical reenactments, vignettes of different African Americans who were in this area and Northern California during the Gold Rush period. And when COVID shut that all down, I was sitting around thinking, well, what are we going to do? I didn't know if we'd ever be able to do any more presentations. So I started contacting some of the people I'd met during the research period and some of the authors who had written books on the subject of African Americans in the Gold Rush. And next thing you know, I had a collection of about 18 essays. I wrote a couple of them. And over a year and a half, that turned into this book. Which is a pretty unique book because it's the only book on the subject that I think really covers a wide span from the Spanish coming into Southern California in the 1700s, establishing Los Angeles with a lot of African-American descendants. And it goes all the way up to the Klamath River where working with a researcher, Patrick Brunmeyer, we discovered a number of African American mines that had been lost to history for, a good 100 years or so. So it's a pretty wide breadth of topics that are covered in the book with a lot of great photography, historical photography, photography of our actors, our local actors, and some maps that have probably never been seen before by scholars or researchers, things that were hidden up in the College of the Siskiyou archives.
Wow. It's a unique book. It's got, it's a compilation from a lot of people, historians, the actors themselves. I know Sandra Martin, one of the contributors. They breathe life into these characters who there isn't a whole lot written about. They had to take thumbnail sketches, basically, and turn them into real characters. African Americans faced special challenges, didn't they? I mean, and I read right at the beginning of the book, there were something like in excess of 5,000 miners in the 1850s in Northern California. Who knew, you know? Their stories need to be told if we're going to get an accurate picture.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because, everybody's heard of the Chinese in the Gold Rush. And granted, there were thousands upon thousands of Chinese, just, boatloads coming over every day. But, you really never hear about the Mexican presence. There's quite a few Mexicans immigrating and Chileans, a lot of Chileans. A lot of Hawaiians, and then the African Americans, and of course, the California Native Americans who were the most affected by, the Gold Rush. We don't really talk about those other groups so much. We focus on the African Americans. That's our focus because that's how the project started, and, a lot of those other groups have been documented, but African Americans pretty much were left out of the conversation, it seems.
You mentioned the Chinese, and yes, we know they came over. I'm not sure the written history has done them justice. I know there were a lot in the Igo Ono area because I've been out there and I find the pottery shards. you pick up a pottery shard with some Chinese writing on it and you go, there's a story here. And I don't know what that story is. So there's a lot of history. You know, one of the points that your book makes, in my opinion, is that local history is as important as the big picture, the national history. We are the sum of our parts, and the parts need to be told. It's a great book. How did you assemble all these people, especially the actors? How did you find them?
Well, so originally, the project really started back in 2010. I was finishing up a documentary from the Quarters to Lincoln Heights, which was about the migration of African Americans from the southern states up to northern California, like Weed and McLeod, Quincy, to work in the logging industry, like in the 1920s. And so I was just going through the census records at the college up there, and I kept going backwards, and there was a lot of African Americans, and I got to 1850s, and there were African Americans from Yreka and out in Scott Valley, and I said, I didn't know that. And but it took about 8 years, because I didn't really know what to do with that information, because I couldn't figure out how to do a documentary, because there was no other information. So finally I met somebody, Patricia Lord, who was at the Historical Society, and we decided to write some grants, and we finally got one. And I had seen this gentleman, Fred McGee, who, him and his wife had that restaurant up in Old Shasta called Shorty's.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a retired Forest Service worker, and I guess he was a musician in his younger years. So I saw him do a monologue of Alvin Coffey, a 40-minute monologue, and he'd never been on stage before. So I thought, maybe I can get people locally and work with them on some acting skills, and we could do what Fred did, like these monologues. So I met Eddie McAllister. I got pointed to him, and him and I started doing some public get-togethers in Redding. And I knew some people up in Siskiyou County, so next thing you know, we were having meetings like every 2 weeks at the Martin Luther King Center or the Veterans Center in Redding, and we assembled, you know, about 10 people. And we did our first presentation in 2019 at Shasta College to kind of a sellout crowd, about 350 people, 400 people.
Wow. So you performed it. Is it anywhere available that the public can see the end product?
Well, we've had different people come and go. So our webpage, goldenghost.org, there's some video clips on that. There probably should be more, but, you know, it's always like a job, you know, to kind of organize, you know, the rehearsals and everything. So, but there are some video clips on there that people can see.
Well, good. I imagine it would create a lot of interest if people actually saw some of these clips. Let's talk a little bit about what African Americans went through that was kind of unique from the other groups. The Fugitive Slave Law came out, I think, around 1850. And that stated something along the lines of if you are caught, you would be returned to your owner. And then later in court, you could not represent yourself in court. So as an African American, if you had escaped and come west, it was kind of scary. You had to watch, you know, who you dealt with, I guess.
Yeah, I don't even think it affected just, you know, people who had escaped slavery maybe and made their way west. I mean, anybody. I mean, can you imagine, like, anybody could come up to you and say, hey, you look like that guy that I saw on a poster or I read about, you know, a 6-foot-tall, muscular African-American, you know, look out for him because you could go up to anybody and say, hey, you're that guy who escaped, and you could... what recourse would you have? Because when you went to court, you couldn't testify. You'd have to find a lawyer who would represent you. So you'd probably have to have some money to do that. But, you know, eventually that led to like 1,000 African Americans leaving California and going up to Canada, because that law was first established on the East Coast. And when it came to California, there were about 1,000 people in the Bay Area and all throughout California said, "We're leaving," you know, and they all took a couple boats up to Canada. And Canada, you know, welcomed them with open arms and gave them land. And, you know, they were trying to settle British Columbia at the time.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, that was a big exodus of people because of that fugitive slave law when California adopted it. And, yeah, like most people don't know also that, you know, California, even though it was a free state, you could bring your slaves to California.
Right.
So,
okay. So there we have the story of Alvin Lee.
Alvin Coffey?
It was
Archie Lee.
Oh, Archie Lee.
Archie
now,
Lee.
Now, his quote-unquote owner tried to take him back probably somewhere to the South.
Yeah, well, there's a number of people like him and the woman from Los Angeles. Well, a lot of these people, they would come here, and the blacks that were here would say, "Hey, you don't have to be a slave anymore because this is California's free."
Yeah,
and it kind of was left up to the judge.
Hmm.
You know, and what people don't realize is California was made up at the time. It was almost 50-50 of Southerners, you know, Southern sympathetic people who came out to California early on for the gold rush or just new opportunities. And then you had the Republicans who were, say, the Democrats of today,
mm-hmm.
Like the party of Lincoln,
sure,
who were anti-slavery. So, you know, if you got the wrong judge, like the first governor of California, you know, he was definitely pro-slavery. If you got the wrong judge, they might just rule that, yeah, you know, you've got to go back or your master can take you. But then some judges, like in Archie Lee's case, you know, they said, well, you know, you're in California now, so you can be free. So, yeah, it was just up to a judge.
Yeah, and what I find kind of interesting, at least in the book, it sounds like it was a last-second rescue.
His case? Kidnapped him, his former owner, and I think it was his brother, and they put him on a ship, and they were going to sail him out of the San Francisco Bay in the middle of the night.
Wow.
And the local African-American community caught wind of that, and they got the police involved, or the sheriff, and they went out to that boat and got him. And I guess they said, you know, he came back, and he kind of made his way up to Canada or something. He got out of here. He left. I think he'd had enough. And they don't really know later on in his life what he ended up doing, but I think if I remember correctly, he did end up going up to Canada.
Okay. Yeah, there's some real stories of success. Alvin Coffey came here as a 26-year-old and ended up making the trip back to, was it Missouri?
Well, he came out originally, he's a local person some people might have heard about. He came out to Old Shasta to mine gold with his owner.
Right.
And the deal was if he made like a certain amount of money, he could purchase his freedom. Well, he did make that amount of money, and then his owner was kind of feeling ill, so he said, "Hey, would you go back with me to St. Louis or Louisiana? And, you know, you can get your wife and then you can be on your way." Well, he brought him back, but he double-crossed him, took his money, and then put him back on the auction block. So this time he was bought by the Tyndalls, and he convinced the Tyndalls to let him go back to California and make them some money and buy his freedom and his wife's freedom. And his children. So they agreed to that. And what you have to realize is, you know, they walked to California. That's one thing that, you know, people see the wagon trains and everybody on the wagon trains, but, you know, most of the people walked. You know, you couldn't put a lot of weight in those wagon trains. So, so that was his second trip walking out. And this time he didn't send the money back. He said, well, okay, send me my freedom papers, then I'll send you the money. So mm-hmm. he did do that.
Yeah.
And he went back, got his wife and a couple kids, and came back to Old Shasta, lived here, worked here, ended up eventually going down to Oakland. Hmm. They call it Beulah. So I think Beulah was a suburb of Oakland at the time. But he went down there and he started an old folks home for African-American pioneers.
Wow. Yeah.
And
interesting guy.
Yeah, really interesting guy. And he worked for the U.S. military during the Modoc War, because he had teams of horses, and, you know, he had a transport company he moved to Tehama County. So he was down there during the Modoc War in the 1870s, and he worked for the Army. That's something I never really understood. I always naively, I thought, why would a black person who was a slave help the U.S. Army fight the Indians? Because I would think that African-American people would sympathize with the plight of Native Americans.
Yeah.
But Rick Moss, who's always been my mentor, he was the curator of the African-American Museum in Oakland. He said, well, think about it, you know, African-Americans who were former slaves, their only shot at having a life was to become an American.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you weren't going to go back to Africa. You didn't speak the language. I mean, your only opportunity was to support the U.S. government and become an American citizen.
Sure.
So he kind of set me straight there, and I kind of understand that now. But because I was always wondering, why would Alvin Coffey help fight the Modocs?
Yeah,
you know. But
well, this is way off subject, but it reminds me a little bit of the Japanese experience in World War II when they signed up to go fight in the European theater to prove they were Americans. And you know, when your back is against the wall, you take desperate measures. Phoebe Colburn, what's her story?
Well, that was an interesting one, and I worked with Sandra on that. I wrote a little piece in the book. It's vague how she got out here, but there was a researcher at the state parks who had said that she had met, what's the guy he did the, there's a pass named after him. Anyway, she met, like, supposedly she met this guy, an African-American trapper, who was living out there. So, you know, she was born a slave in Alabama. They know that. Somehow she got to California. Supposedly she was illiterate. And she came out with this colonel. And then this colonel, who it turns out might not have really been a colonel, he was with her on all her business transactions in Redding or in Old Shasta. And all they really say about her, and there's some local historians that they just remark that she was an illiterate black woman and she ended up buying a hotel and making a lot of money. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's like the short story. But, you know, she had a dress shop in Old Shasta. And she made hats, and I thought, you know, coming from an art perspective, I thought, have you looked at those hats that they made back then? I mean, that's a lost art. Those are like amazing sculptures,
yep, yes,
like amazing creations, and those dresses women wore. So obviously she was extremely gifted and talented as an artisan, and no one talks about that. And they say she owned a hotel. She was probably a madam. Well, you know, maybe she was, because, you know, most women in the gold rush were prostitutes. I mean, that's documented.
Yeah.
But was she really illiterate? I mean,
Didn't she go on to start a school?
Yeah, she helped start a school for minorities, natives and Native Americans, African Americans, Mexicans, Chinese. So I think she was probably a very dynamic person, but as white historians record her story, they kind of minimalize her accomplishments to, you know, she got rich or she made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that's just maybe the focus of the times.
Does she crop up in like newspaper articles or how do you find information on someone like her?
That's pretty hard. You know, that her, I think they found her census records, her birth certificate, but coming out, how did she get out here is a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never read anything. Unfortunately, there might be some archives from the old Shasta, but all those archives during the fires were put down at one of the air bases in the Central Valley where they created the state archives.
Is this recent?
Well, during the last fire, you know,
car fire
and stuff, they moved everything out of there.
Oh, boy.
And I called down there to ask about, you know, looking at those files. Well, you can't go there and look at anything. And it's a big airplane hangar. It's a huge space. And they have like two people working there.
Oh, geez.
So they were like, well, it might take a year or so for us to, you know, but so.
That's frustrating.
So there might be something down there.
Yeah.
You know, under normal conditions, it would be right out there in Old Shasta in their archives, but they're not there anymore.
And so. Phoebe, she has a gravestone in Old Shasta?
Yeah, she does. And her... She adopted a Native American boy, and that's kind of mysterious, too.
Yeah, it's a great story.
So there's a lot of mystery surrounding her.
Yeah.
And what Sandra did...
And that's Sandra Martin, the poet that I've interviewed on this show earlier.
Yeah,
very talented lady.
Yeah, I was telling her about Phoebe, and I said, you know, here's what we know, and here's what I think people should know. And then I said, why don't you just, you know, add some life to this person?
Yeah.
You know, and Sandra did a great job, and she does a great job. She kind of performs Phoebe's character when we do our live presentations, and she does an excellent job. She, you know, I saw Sandra deliver a poem at an African American graduation in Reading. When, you know, I saw her do that, I asked Eddie McAllister, I said, we need to ask her to be part of our group. I mean, she's the real thing. She's very talented.
She really is. Okay, well, I understand that you went up to the actual sites that you could find, the mining sites, places of historical significance. Where were these sites, and what did you find out? Mm-hmm. Anything?
You know, what's interesting is there was a New York Times person that heard about our project, probably through Cal Humanities, and she called me and she said, hey, do you have any artifacts you can send pictures of? And I was like, well... Like, what kind of an artifact? Like, African Americans didn't have any special kinds of artifacts other than, you know, they wore the same clothes, they used the same tools, and there's mine sites that we did find. Like, for example, on the Klamath River, anybody can Google this. You just Google Negro Boy Mine.
Hmm.
And it'll come up on a mining mining website. And so we took our group up there in 2020 just to see what it was like to be at one of these mine sites. And it's in a canyon going up north of the Klamath River, this windy little canyon. And we couldn't go to the very entrance to the mine because it was private property, but I just thought it'd be interesting to go and see where these people potentially worked. And everybody had their own experience there, you know, given it, you know, it was 150 years later. And then Patrick Brunmeier, who did our archaeology, he went to about three other sites up in the Siskiyous. that had the, you know, they all have the pejorative term on the maps, the old maps. And then him and I went on the Salmon River to a site, and we met with some people there who, there was a lot of rumors and a lot of stories, because that's a lot more of a remote area, and there's still some folklore about African Americans. It ended up not being totally accurate, but...
Probably a reflection of how people felt about things.
Yeah, well, you know, my sense is that what I always imagine, like, imagine getting off a boat and, you know, walking up the Sacramento River to Old Shasta, and then maybe walking over, you know, Highway 3 into the Scott Valley area, and then walking over Etna Pass into the Salmon River back in 1855, you know, wolves and grizzly bears. And I mean, I honestly, I can't even fathom what that trip was like, let alone who you'd meet along the way. So there was, I think, the environmental things you had to deal with, but also the social things, being a black person. You know, you're going to meet a lot of Southern miners along the way.
Very territorial. This is my stake. Stay away.
Or have you found any gold? And if you have, I'm going to take your claim. That's documented in a lot of... So we took a lot of documentation from the Sierras that has been documented. Back in the 70s, there's a great book by Rudolph Lapp. And we kind of juxtaposed that onto scenarios that, you know, probably occurred up in the Siskiyous. You know, that's kind of how we created the ambiance for our characters.
Vignettes, Well, you know, those people that made the trip up and they got it, if nothing else, an idea of how hard it must have been. You know, that's rugged country without the natural grizzly bear or miner. That pick and axe work, it's tough. Well, you know, we are unfortunately starting to run short of time. Mark, I really appreciate you coming in. On behalf of a lot of people out there in this community here in Redding, thank you. Thank you for what you do. I know that this is has legs. It's going to continue to be performed. And so where can the public maybe catch you down the line?
Well, we're going to do a piece in the, we're doing a show in Vallejo, and then we're supposed to do something in Chico in the fall. I'm sure we'll get back to Redding maybe this winter sometime. If people want to check out a book, you can go to our website, goldenghost.org. You can purchase a book there.
Good.
And I'm sure we'll do another show in Redding at some point. We're kind of just regrouping, just kind of getting rolling again after the whole COVID. And hopefully things will stay open.
Well, again, thanks for coming in. And I'm going to give you one last plug. Mark is an artist in many realms. He does films. He paints. If somebody wants to see your work, where would they go?
They could look at the markoliver.org.
Okay.
There's some stuff on the web there.
Yeah. Great. Okay, well, maybe at a future date we'll do this again, but it's been a real pleasure, Mark. Thanks for coming in.
All right, well, thanks for having me.
Okay, you've been listening to KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio out of Round Mountain in Bella Vista, and this is Jim Dowling with Right Stuff signing off for the evening. Good night.